Hey, resilient recruiters, here's reason number two why you must attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. And that is the keynote presentations. You'll gain exclusive insights from other top billing recruiters and entrepreneurs who've either scaled their own desk or built multi-seven-figure businesses. I myself will, of course, be one of the speakers, but the presentations that I am the most excited about are not professional speakers and trainers, but other recruitment business owners like you who will be unpacking their most effective tactics and strategies. No theory, just practical insights from people who are in the trenches, ordinary people achieving extraordinary results. There's still time to take advantage of the early bird pricing. By the way, it's happening on September 17th and 18th. So don't miss out. Reserve your place now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be joined today by Susie Farrell. Susie is the director and founder of Addison, an executive recruitment and search firm based in Dublin, Ireland. Addison partners with organizations looking to attract exceptional mid to senior level talent within communications, corporate affairs, public affairs, and marketing. She has 17 years experience. Prior to launching Addison in 2018, she worked for global specialist recruitment brands such as Ampersand Executive, Talent2, and Michael Page in Ireland, Australia, and Middle East. Susie has extensively delivered across financial services and banking, energy and resources, telecoms, retail, consumer and government sectors, into the areas of corporate affairs, marketing, and business transformation. Susie, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you for that lovely introduction. Great to be on your show.
Well, I was trying to work out how long we've known each other, and I think it's what, 4 or 5 years,
it's actually 3 years, and I remember this because when we first met, I had just had a baby, and now she is now nearly 3 and a half.
Wow. Okay, that's a
that's the timeline.
Absolutely. Oh, amazing. Well, we'll talk about like your family and how you've created that flexibility for yourself as we go along, because you've done, that's always a challenge for parents running a business and, all the family commitments as well. So listen, could you just like take me back to the beginning of your recruitment career? How did you get into recruiting, Susie?
Well, essentially, I first got into recruitment in 2004. I was in Australia. I was in Melbourne, and I'd gone over to Australia just to do the sort of the year traveling as you do with my other half at the time, who's now my husband. And I'd come from a marketing background, and it was one of those conversations with Michael Page, which is a very, I guess they've a pretty big market share in the Australian market. And I went in interviewing for a marketing role, and suddenly the conversation turned into, have you thought about recruitment? So that's how it all began. So I joined Michael Page in 2004, very much looking after marketing. My first desk was purely contracting. Back then, we had no LinkedIn. It was all just about networking, emailing candidates, phoning candidates, just on the phones pretty much 12 hours a day. So that was very much my first experience of recruitment.
Fantastic. And how long did you do that marketing, contract desk for?
So I was in that role for about 2 years, and then I moved on from Michael Page. I was approached by another business called Talent2, again in Melbourne, and joined a wonderful marketing and communications portfolio. And pretty much, look, goodness, I probably worked with the best people in the game in that particular team. They were absolutely amazing. So lots of opportunity to learn and grow. Again, looked after contracting. So it's interesting when I sort of reflect back, it's only probably in the past 5 or 6 years where I've completely specialized in doing more permanent appointments. Prior to that, I was very much a contract recruiter through and through. So, but working across, you know, different types of portfolios during that time.
Amazing. What was it that made Talent 2 such a significant experience? You said it was a great place to work, you know, people at the top of their game. Why is that?
Just really highly experienced and just really experienced recruiters. So Talent 2 was made up of people who, like a team of people who they've come from other, I guess, recruitment and search firms. They've been in the industry a long time. And so I guess I was joining a team that were like super, super experienced. They'd all been working in their respective markets for maybe 6, 8, 10, 15 years. So we together, I guess, as a team, we just collaborated very well together. And we just went on all our meetings together. So there was, you know, any pitch that we went into, we would always win. So it was just a very, very, just a talented team of recruitment professionals. I'd really probably never seen anything like it before. And we just built a very, very good brand for ourselves. And it's interesting because that particular team I worked with, Talent 2, a couple of them decided to pull together. And whilst I'd actually left after 2 years working in this particular team, I moved to Dubai. And while I was living in Dubai, 3 or 4 of the senior managers of that particular team left Talent 2 and set up their own business, which became Ampersand. And then I ended up going back to Australia after my stint in the Middle East and joined that particular business, Ampersand. So,
okay, wow.
Yeah, so there was kind of like a 10-year working relationship and I guess friendship with that particular group of people.
Amazing. You sort of threw the Dubai in there. Right. How did that, why did you go to Dubai and then back to Australia?
So when I initially left Melbourne, I guess had gone back to Ireland, to be honest. This is back in 2008. And this is when the recession had hit.
Oh, absolutely.
I got back to Ireland and within a 2 to 3 month period, I realized I'd made a big mistake leaving Australia. And I had former colleagues who just moved to Dubai and had joined Michael Page in Dubai. So pretty much got the call just to say, look, why don't you move over here, give this a go. So I moved to Dubai and picked up a completely different area, which was human resources. So I looked after HR recruitment. And I guess, look, it was an interesting time because I was based in Dubai, but very much recruiting across a number of different markets within that particular region. So and it was very much my first experience managing processes where you'd never actually get to meet the candidate or the client. So it was all just done over the phone and on Skype. It was just Skype back then. So this is kind of back in sort of, you know, 2008, 2009. So it's just really interesting how sort of now we're at, you know, 2021, and I've pretty much spent the entire past 12 months managing processes, but not actually meeting people because due to the pandemic. So back then I definitely, it was an adjustment, but now, goodness, you just get used to it. So, but it was a really interesting period. And look, to be honest with you, Dubai for me wasn't really my kind of place. So I had kept in touch with my former boss, and just a wonderful individual called Haley James. And she had since then set up Ampersand with a number of other people. And she just said, come on, come back to Melbourne.
Awesome.
So that's pretty much very kind of short stint in Dubai. Like I was really just there a little bit under 2 years. And then I moved back to Melbourne, back to Australia.
Fantastic. All right. And so, and was that still doing contracts, Susie, at that point? Or
yeah, so it was, yeah, it was an interesting one. So I went back to join their business to pretty much set up an entire new function from scratch, which was change management consulting. So change management as an industry had really, really picked up during that time. There were a number of consulting firms, obviously placing change managers for pretty much, you know, for pretty high rates on high fees. So what we wanted to do is kind of, I guess, present a, you know, just a different kind of offering where we would go out and source change managers or change consultants, however you want to call them, and yes, place them as daily rate contractors, you know, more independent contractors, but then obviously charge a margin. So pretty much that business was pretty, very much, you know, was set up from scratch, going out to develop relationships with new clients, build a team. So we ended up building a team between across Melbourne and Sydney. Look, great experience. Probably, I'd say something that I'm, you know, one of my most proud achievements, really. So just in terms of coming back into Australia and building a business from scratch again, but still leveraging, you know, relationships as well from the rest of the team. So the relationships that they had. So, but we really did build a wonderful change management practice.
Amazing. So talk me through then, because this seems like a significant, you know, a milestone in your career is building up this change management practice from scratch. How did you go about doing that? And then what ultimately, like when you left, what was the sort of size and shape of that business?
It was very much about delivering. I know this sounds very simple and straightforward, but it was about getting a couple of early wins with one of the major banks in Melbourne. And I guess in the change practice and the kind of change management sort of arena, it's quite a small network of people. So everyone knows everyone. And it was about kind of demonstrating some credibility, you know, showing what I could do, demonstrating my understanding of the function, which I did pretty quickly. And from then, it was just very much relying on introductions, referrals into new clients. And I guess just a lot of, presenting, a lot of MPC marketing, what you would call most placeable candidate marketing. So presenting proactively presenting candidates and clients. So that's pretty much how the business built up. And to the point when I left Australia, so I was running that business for 5 years. We had a team of five. And goodness, like we probably at any one time had maybe sort of about 100, 120 contractors out working for us. So it became quite a big business, you know, across those two markets.
Amazing. That sounds brilliant. Do you remember what the revenue was?
So revenue wise, we were probably going into like a 1.5 million dollar business annually. So
brilliant. All right. So you kind of skimmed over like how you built it. You did MPC marketing. You made sure that you had great relationships with your candidates, that you demonstrated your understanding and credibility in that space. And then that, because of that, you got referrals and introductions. But you made it sound almost easy, and I'm sure it was not. Like, what was the biggest challenge or obstacle to building that practice?
I'm probably better in person in terms of meeting with clients and candidates, and that's very much just how I built up the network. So I'm not someone who does the whole cold calling. There was a lot of just meetings. I also set up a change management forum, which, you know, allowed senior change management practitioners to sort of come together and meet up like once a month or every 2 months. So again, you know, that kind of whole concept built up, and it just really helped, I guess, helped kind of build and sort of, you know, cement those relationships. So it was, Yeah, look, it was just a process of just constantly meetings every single week. Yeah,
your forum idea is genius, and there must not have been meant. I mean, even now, there's not many recruiters doing that sort of thing, and I can imagine back then it would have been even more quite unique in that market. How did that actually work?
So we would get together for like there might have been 40, 50 people in this group. And at any one time, you might have 20 to 30 people in the room. We would bring in sometimes guest speakers. And if we didn't have a guest speaker, then one of the members of the group would, you know, speak and host and select a topic. So we generally would meet in the morning, you know, over breakfast, we'd have a few croissants or coffee or whatever. And then we'd kick off and have a very much kind of a, you know, a discussion for about an hour. So, and look, I guess my role in that was, I was very much the facilitator bringing the group together. I'm not the expert in the room. I, you know how to recruit and identify talent in this space, but you know, I relied very much on the group to come and actually participate in the discussion. So I guess that really did help my overall sort of building my own personal brand in the change management market. I guess it's interesting because a lot of those people ended up, we got to know each other quite well, and they ended up kind of becoming friends. And the interesting thing is, because I was dealing with senior candidates, I guess I would be placing these candidates, but then sometimes these candidates would also become clients. So it was that kind of relationship.
I love it. Susie, this is such a golden nugget. Like, this is worth the price of admission just right there. That's a fantastic idea. And I love how you organize that. So let me just really get the nitty gritty a little bit. So it was like a monthly breakfast meeting, or how often?
Exactly. So we generally caught up, it might have been every 2 months. Every 2 to 3 months, we definitely tried to host one per quarter.
Okay.
It is something that worked extremely well, and so much so that it is an idea that and a concept that I brought back to Ireland. And I now, it's now something that I do in this market that I'm currently managing now, which is obviously my business, as you know, is across corporate communications and corporate affairs. So I've now set up a corporate affairs forum, which is called the Corporate Affairs Advisory Board, which is CAB.
Affairs Advisory Board. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Which is it's a similar kind of concept that we first set up, that I first set up in Melbourne, but now it's obviously for corporate communications practitioners. Now, the difference with this one is it's very much targeted at, it's only for directors and head of function level. So it's because you're trying to create like that kind of peer, like a real peer group for people. It's very much Chatham House rules. So everything that's talked about, you know, in these meetings, you know, it stays amongst us. So again, it's been this, the corporate affairs board here, I have to say, has been, you know, has been the best thing that I've set up in Ireland, because it's really helped Addison get up off the ground and really helped me build my brand. And I guess when I look at the clients that I would deliver into and have a very, you know, a good working relationship with now, it's all due to the corporate affairs board. So I can't give you numbers in terms of revenue, but a number of new assignments, a number of jobs, a number of clients, they've all come through this networking group that I set up.
Love it. It's such a great concept, Susan. You've done a brilliant job with that. You might remember back in episode 43, I talked to Plamen Ivanov, the executive chairman of iIntro. If you missed it, it's well worth going back into the archives and having a listen. One of the things we talked about was a way for recruiters to shift the conversation with prospects away from fees and make it all about value. iIntro has created a tool called the Bad Hire Calculator that you can show to your prospects that proves to them that your recruitment service will save them potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. When you can do that, the exact fees you charge almost become immaterial because you've proved that you will save the client the most money in the long run. If you'd like to add this tool to your arsenal, you'd be pleased to know that I've partnered with iIntro and they're offering a 25% discount to listeners of the Resilient Recruiter podcast. All you have to do to claim this discount is book a free consultation and mention my name or this podcast. Just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained, follow the instructions, and iIntro will take care of the rest. That's recruitmentcoach.com/retained. So let's rewind just slightly then. You decided to come back to Ireland, which I guess, you know, eventually most people, not everybody, but most people, expats, you know, sooner or later, especially if you are, you know, wanting to settle down, are gonna come home. Was that the motivation, or what was it that made you want to?
So, well, it was, I guess we'd been living overseas for 13 years. My husband and I had our first child was born in Melbourne.
Oh, wow.
And Patrick. And so when we made a decision, we very much made the decision just around wanting to be around family. So we absolutely loved Australia. So we had such an amazing, amazing lifestyle there, amazing group of friends. And I guess a group of friends who were really our family, like our family over there. But ultimately, we wanted to move back, you know, and be with our families here and have our and raise a family and raise our kids in terms of them being around grandparents, cousins, yes, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So so we came back in 2015. And it's funny because when I look back at it now, I actually had resigned to Ampersand, resigned in tears because did not want to leave Melbourne and did not want to leave the business. And pretty much straight away they responded with, well, why don't we just set up Ampersand in Dublin? We don't want you to leave the business either. So I was
given this. Wow, that's amazing that they, like, in fact, I don't know why more businesses don't do that. Like, if someone is moving for the right reasons, like, it's not because they are going to a competitor or that they aren't enjoying that culture. Why not try and create a new opportunity from that?
That's it, exactly. And look, I was felt very touched that they had so much faith in me to do it, really. So so we came back to Ireland, and I set up, pretty much, you know, set up this new business at the same time of trying to find somewhere to live and at the same time of actually getting married. This all happened within a six-week period, and my wow. husband starting a new job. So we look back at it now and go, God, that was a crazy sort of 3 or 4 months. But I, look, that was probably the scariest moment I think I've ever had in my recruitment career. Day one, being in an office by myself in a new market, where I was probably a little bit naive. I thought, how hard can this be to set up a business in Ireland? I'm Irish and I've got relationships, but when you're starting from absolutely nothing, you know, it is quite daunting. So
let me just highlight the difference. So when you built the practice in change management, although that was a new area, it was within the context of an established business.
Yes.
And you had the infrastructure, the support, the colleagues, the like client relationships to some extent. And but this time it was really from scratch because there was nothing. You were like you were just building it from the ground up.
Exactly. So, and look, I guess what we were trying to do was we had such a wonderful brand name and reputation in Australia and actually across sort of Singapore region and Hong Kong sort of region. But it was just, I guess, what we were trying to do was set up a business, which we've got this great brand and this great reputation. Let's just bring it to Ireland. But I just found that every single client I went into to meet, they were all like, okay, well, who are your clients here? what work have you done here? And I was like, well, I can't tell you that because we're starting from nothing. So, and that's just how I found that, like, there was a lot of goodwill here in terms of in the Irish market, like, and, you know, and a lot of people that I still was able to kind of, you know, send a message to and go, can you help me with this introduction? So people were very, very kind and very helpful in that respect. So there was a lot of goodwill. But when it came to actually meeting a brand new client and trying to, I guess, demonstrate what we could do, you know, it was difficult because we couldn't sell the Irish story because we were starting from nothing. So, and we probably, look, I guess it didn't quite work out. So, and I'm happy to share that, because it's something that it's been a learning for me. That we, you know, trying to set up a business where you're trying to use the legacy and a reputation from a completely different market and then trying to sort of just plant it in a whole new market. And the Irish market works very differently. It is very much all about relationships. It's just, that's just quite a difficult task. So, and straight away we hired a team where it was all about, let's have this big team so we've got scale and it looks like to clients we have scale, but in actual fact we had no clients. So so there was big pressure on me and the team to get up and running and get up and running fast, you know, so we could start billing. But that does take time. So if hindsight's a wonderful thing, but if I look back at it now, I would have done it differently. I would have gone, okay, let's just keep the business small, just me for the first year, so we can kind of slowly and gradually build it up, rather than having this team and having just, you know, this massive cost hanging over our heads with salaries every single month. So ultimately, look, it didn't quite work. And so that's probably been my biggest regret and biggest disappointment, because it was such a, you know, I ran such a successful business in Australia and the directors had such faith in me to do it in Ireland, came back, built up this team, and we just didn't quite get there quickly enough. Yeah, look, very, really disappointing. And it was just really just, I felt I'd let the directors down in Australia and felt like I'd let the team down here. But, you know, they decided to pull back their operations from Ireland and just focus on their Australian business. So I'm still friends with the directors. Like, we're still in touch all the time. But yeah, look, sometimes you just try things and they don't work out and you just have to sort of learn from it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that story, Susie, because I think it's important for people to hear not just the high points and the successes, but also the disappointments. I know you were particularly devastated about that one because you really already, like, you were friends with and you know, comrades with the people that you were in partnership with, right?
Yeah.
And so it feels like a big this is called the resilient recruiter for a reason, because that is the reality, is not everything works out, and the people who are successful in this industry are the ones who can recover from failure, from disappointments, from, you know, those feelings of you know, you must have been just gutted at the time. How did you bounce back from that and what happened from there?
Well, absolutely. Look, confidence was pretty knocked. There was the option to, I guess, continue the business with just me. We'd given it a good go and I just thought, look, maybe the best thing is to part ways. And they want, you know, ultimately they would have kept the business running here for me, given our history and our friendship. But ultimately I knew deep down they wanted to pull the operations. So we agreed that that was the best thing to do. And yeah, look, my confidence was pretty knocked. I was also quite heavily pregnant at the time,
about six months
pregnant. And I absolutely questioned leaving agency life altogether. So I thought, okay, this is my time to go in-house. But I just knew like in-house just wasn't for me. You know, I'm an agency person through and through. So I just had to pick myself up again. And I guess being pregnant, you know, I just was like, okay, well, even though I was 6 months pregnant, I was like, I still have a chance to, you know, to get the business set up, get all the process and the structure right, start going out there, making some calls. So, and look, I guess the good thing that I was able to do was I was able to contact people and say, and I explained that Ampersand was no longer, that they pulled back their operations in Ireland. But I was continuing under a new brand name, which was my own business called Addison. The name Addison has actually come about through, it was actually the name of the street I lived on in Melbourne.
Oh, cool.
So I actually can't take credit for that. That was my husband's idea. So, it was just me. And I just felt, you know, going into this stage of my life where having a young baby, a second child, I just felt this would give me the flexibility as a working mother. Now, yes, it gave me flexibility, but goodness, it was a bit of a crazy first 12 months because I was literally on the tools working to the day that I actually gave birth, you know.
Oh, my goodness, Susie. That just sounds stressful.
What? Yeah.
Okay, so paint a picture for me. So you're literally about to give birth, but you're still in the office. Like, what was going through your mind at that point when you're trying to make placements and like baby could be any day now.
And have a baby at the same time. Well, look, my husband kept on saying, he was always in the background saying, you know, let me help you. I can make these calls. I can send emails. I was like, yeah. And I always knew he'd be in the background to help, you know, if I really needed it. But look, I was lucky, you know, I was able to pretty much have a baby and kind of leave the hospital the next day. The funny thing is I have this memory of a client phoning me when I had like a newborn in my arms and it was like 6 o'clock at night and they were calling with a new brief. And like, I just said nothing. They didn't know that I was in hospital having a baby. I said nothing.
You didn't tell your clients that you were having a baby?
No, a number of my clients didn't know. And look, I didn't want them to know because I was a new business. I didn't want them to think I was going to be stepping back and that I'd lose that relationship and they'd call someone else, you know. I was really protective over just setting up this new, you know, Addison business.
Wow.
And so I ended up absolutely continuing. I took time off to look after Frankie, but I was still on the tools. I still took briefs. I wasn't going out there business developing, but I was still very much managing, you know, any brief that came in, any requirement that came in, I managed it and I shortlisted it and I got the CVs out. So I wasn't so available for meetings and particularly with candidates. And I did explain, look, I have a newborn at home. They were fine. But it was a funny time though, because a number of clients, they call me like 6 months later and go, we'd just be chatting. They're like, do you have a newborn? I'd be saying, yeah, well, she's now 6 months. And they're like, so you were probably in the hospital, like actually recruiting at the same time. So, yeah.
So Susie, wait, you started telling a story about like you got a call for a client brief and you had a newborn in your arms. Did the client ever know? You just kept taking Susie taking the job order with Frankie at a few days old. That's hilarious.
Yeah. But I know that sounds crazy. I wouldn't do that now. But at the time, you know, needs must. It was a new business and I was determined to, I'd done all the work in getting it up and running and I was just determined to make it work. And I really didn't want to think that, you know, I'd be dropping the ball. So clients, so I just continued. But I honestly wasn't going out, you know, all the BDE calls and trying to pick up new jobs. That for that for first 4 or 5 months with a new baby, I just when a job came into me, I managed it. So I was lucky. I was lucky, you know, the work continued to come in that summer without me being sort of hard, you know, hard on the business development.
Wow. What an achievement that is to pull that off, Susie. Like, wow, that's you've blown my mind. So respect. So listen, since that time, Addison has gone from strength to strength. What would you say is the secret to the success that you had that didn't, you know, it didn't work out with Ampersand, but then the second go around, you've really made it work?
I think it's, look, I guess the experience that I had with Ampersand in terms of the market that I first was doing was, you know, I'd started to build up relationships in communications and corporate affairs. So it kind of was an easier transition because I was pretty much saying, look, it's just me. You're still dealing with me. It's just a new business name. So, and because it was just me, I guess I probably felt this, I guess, a level of responsibility, really, that I had to make it work, you know, that I wanted to make it work. I didn't want to let myself down and let down, and of course, just also let down my family, you know. I'd had two small kids, and I guess, you know, I felt just empowered, I guess, really, because this was my moment to, you know, grow my own business, which probably deep down I really always had wanted to do, but it was just about the timing. And I have to say, like, there's no way I could have done it without the experiences that I had previously. So, like, I absolutely, you know, I'm really grateful for the people I've worked with in Ampersand, you know, Haley James, Sarah Wilson, Lloyd Lazaro, like, they were all amazing. So, and I guess I learned a lot from them. But in terms of making it work for me, look, I have to say it was timing. And I guess at the time, communications and corporate affairs in Ireland as a function was starting to build rebuilding post the recession. And anybody I was speaking to, they were probably a little bit underwhelmed about the kind of service that they were getting from other agencies. And no disrespect to other agencies, but I think it's quite a niche area. And I guess clients were finding that these recruiters just weren't quite understanding the function. So I understood the function. I had massive history in it. I'd recruited in comms and marketing when I first started in 2004. I knew what I was doing. So look, I was probably able to demonstrate credibility. Like I was a one man band, as a one lady band. And I think clients liked that. I think clients liked, they're like, right, this girl set up a business on her own. Good for her. They wanted to give me a shot, really, you know. And I was just, you know, just super determined to make it work. So I think I was also really brave with my instincts at the time. So I did, you know, I didn't want to let noise get in the way. So I was like, I'm doing this. And if it didn't work, then I didn't know what I was going to do. So I had to make it work.
Amazing. So there was a lot riding on this, but it sounds like you just had the mindset that I am going to make this work. And you chose a niche that you knew a lot about. And it was a function that was growing in Ireland. Yeah. So all of your past experience had really set you up for success. And then there was a market opportunity there and you grabbed it and you've done really well with it. So
yeah.
Now, you mentioned that you replicated your forum idea and set up the Corporate Affairs Advisory Board. So that is a phenomenal idea. One difference, though, is that like a lot of your experience had been in contract, but now you do permanent and kind of mid to senior level appointments. And I know you do a lot of your work on a retained basis. So why did you decide to go retained, and what was involved in making that transition?
So I wanted to go retained because I felt it was really risky running a business and being the only person in the business and having all this contingent work. So never really knowing, okay, well, what money's going to come in next month? And I had been in a lot of meetings where in Ampersand in Australia, every single meeting that I had went, I'd gone, you know, joined it with a permanent recruiter, every single time they pitched retained. So I knew I had to pitch retained. I just hadn't really done it myself because I was a contract recruiter. That's not the model. It's different. So I felt that to make my business really solid, it needed to be a retained model. Now I say, not every single brief is retained, you know, but probably 80% of my work is now. And it just helps you forecast. We know all of this. It helps you forecast, guarantees revenue. But it also just guarantees that I'm going to deliver the result because I absolutely have to do it. They've paid for it. So, and it just guarantees an outcome for a client. So, but I do feel working on a retained basis really kind of helps firm up the relationship you have with your clients because you're in a contact with them a lot more. It's a real high touch process. It's, a regular contact, right? The process, you get to know them better. So I was starting to do a lot more senior work. So my business has always been about, you know, my sweet spot is to deliver between mid to senior level appointments. But I guess 12 months into the business and then 2 years into the business, I was finding I was being approached and pitching myself to do a lot more senior work. So I probably just needed the confidence to, you know, I just had to back myself doing it every time. And now I've done that. Now, goodness, it's funny how things, you know, how I feel like I've grown because now I kind of go, well, why wouldn't you be contacting me for a director level role or a head of role? And why wouldn't you be retaining me, you know? So I just feel like I've been able to really build, I guess, my experience and my credibility in that space. So hope that answers.
Beautiful. Yeah. And what I love about that is, like, now it's natural and it's the logical thing for you to do. And you have lots of success to give you that confidence, right? And so it's almost like success leads to more success.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, it was more just a decision that you made because, like, it was less risky to be retained than to be contingent. And you absolutely had to make sure that you could generate revenue to support your family. And so you just approached it with that mindset, like, this is the way that I'm going to do it. I love that.
Exactly. Brilliant. And it's interesting because now I'm starting to go back to my contracting days and I'm now building up my contracting portfolio.
Oh, so, amazing.
So I've been placing permanent candidates, you know, in the past 3 years, and it's only really this year that I made the decision that I needed to get all my processes and paperwork set up to be able to place consultants in my space, and now I've just placed two. So
yes, well done. That's awesome.
So that's great because it's placing a contractor or a consultant for 12 months is really good revenue. So It just took me a while just to set some time aside and get that set up and be able to say that, oh yeah, I can support your, you know, client, hey client, I can support you with doing this. And also just to offer that question. So every time I was picking up a permanent role, you know, I was not asking about contractors, you know, would you not consider bringing in an interim for 3 months? So now you've got to build up your interim network in order to do that. And that's going to be slow. But now I'm a little bit more confident in offering that as a solution.
Beautiful. So you've got the best of both worlds. And Susie, there's one more thing I wanted to ask you, make sure that we cover today, which is you were involved in a really interesting initiative in the last 12 months, the COVID Comms Awards. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that was such a cool concept.
Yeah. So through the Corporate Affairs Advisory Board, I was introduced to a super contact in the UK, a lady called Helen Dunn. And she's the editor of an industry magazine, an industry publication called the Corporate Communications Magazine. And she has been running a communications awards for about 10 years. So she was a guest speaker in one of the forums about 2 years ago. And, you know, we've struck up a relationship, become friends, and we're in contact a little bit. So she approached me to say last year, because of COVID, she couldn't do an in-person awards in the UK. And she was running a complete virtual awards called the COVID Comms Awards in the UK. And she said, would you be interested in helping to launch the same awards, same event in Ireland? I was like, 100%, this is a great opportunity. So we pretty much partnered together. She was the person in terms of, you know, setting up all the logistics. She had entertainment on the night. She was the one who, she created all the different categories. There was like 10 or 12 different categories. And pretty much the whole purpose of the awards was for people in comms to be recognized for the work that they've been doing during the crisis. So comms has been a function which, you know, it's probably one of the functions that's had such profile in the past 12 months, because during the pandemic, everybody was working from home. Suddenly organizations were going, how are we going to engage? How are we going to communicate to our staff? And then how do we kind of show externally, what are we doing as an organization, you know, to support communities, to, you know, what are we doing? I guess sustainability. So all this stuff started to be talked about a lot more. And organizations were really leaning in on the comms function like never before. So comms people were, trying to work from home, manage families, but then also try and help their organizations stick together in terms of communication. So it was a big, big, hard task. So Helen felt it was a really good idea to put an awards together, a virtual awards program, to help, for us to be able to recognize people's efforts, you know, in comms. So there was all different categories. Like there was best internal comms team, there was best CEO leadership communications, like there's all these different categories. So my role in it was to obviously build the profile, advertise it, using social channels and that, and just use all of my network to get everyone involved in this and submit entries. We had a great response. Everyone thought it was a brilliant idea. And then we ran the awards night back in May. We used a platform called AirMeet, which it'd be a pretty popular virtual kind of conference platform now. We had entertainment on the night, and yeah, it was brilliant. Like, you know, just massive interest. Now Helen has gone back to having her in-person awards this year. She actually just hosted it in London last week. So, you know, it would be terrific to run in another awards program next year, but who knows, we may be able to do it in person next time.
Such a brilliant idea. And I you know, applaud you for recognizing that and really seizing it. It must have been quite a lot of extra work, but what do you feel has been the benefit in terms of your profile in that space in Ireland, and like what did you feel would be the benefit to Addison?
I think it's helped just put my name, my brand name, my own personal brand, like within the comms industry. It's kind of helped kind of ferment it a bit more, if that makes sense. And also I used the awards to sort of, to get in, you know, to open up doors with new clients, because I could see who had entered. So it was a bit of kind of a soft sell. I'd follow up and say, how did you find the awards? And, you know, so it opened up new connections, definitely. But it was just something that I really enjoyed doing, because I wanted to support the industry that I'm in. Like, I need to be, I'm in this market. Yes, I recruit for this market, but I want to feel like I'm really supporting the function and advocating for the people that I'm recruiting. So, and I think that they do great work.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing that story, Susie. It's brilliant. And so impressed with the work you're doing. And, you know, loving this experience of hearing your full story. We've known each other 3 years, but I've learned about you even more. Really enjoyed that. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Mark. I've really enjoyed this today. I was a little bit nervous, but I've actually really enjoyed it.
Great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I think people will get a lot out of this. So many great ideas, but also they'll be able to relate to you. You were very real about like the highs and the lows of this business. And so thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great day, Susie. Catch up again soon.
You too. Thanks, Mark. Bye.